Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And we have to try to get people to think and see things as they are. We've heard today that Iran has launched a small satellite into space, and immediately why the Obama White House was extremely critical of Iran for not acting responsibly, for daring to put up a satellite, and yet 50 other nations have put up satellites. We weren't upset when Brazil or Argentina or any of the other countries put up their satellites. But if Iran wants to do anything immediately, why they are, they want to have a nuclear weapon. And yet the people to the east in China and the north in Russia and to the south in Pakistan and India and to the west in Israel, they all have nuclear weapons. But Iran can't possibly have a nuclear weapon that we... And, of course, there's an organized campaign to get the American people to feel that Iran is a terrible country and there's just no way we can work with them. But that, of course, is the thing that eventually leads to war. And that's the thing. Our guest this evening, Mr. Robert Baer, has spent many years as a CIA agent working in the Middle East. He spent a number of years working in Iraq when Saddam was there. Of course, he was living in Kurdistan. But he's written a fascinating book entitled... See No Evil, and we've talked about that book many times. But this evening we're going to be talking about his latest book called The Devil We Know, Going Into the Background of Iran. And as you read the book, you get an entirely different picture of Iran, the enemy that is there. Obviously, they don't agree with many of our policies, but I don't think the average individual really understands Iran or the background of what's going on there. Bob, would you like to pick up the story there? Because you've done a great job in this book.
Well, my story is a personal voyage. I served in Lebanon in the 80s. I was in Lebanon when the Marines were blown up in 1983. I ran the Iranian opposition for many years. It was a bloody, bloody revolutionary regime, which I was convinced was nothing we could do about it except watch it collapse under its own weight and just bide our time. But what I noticed over the years, it became progressively irrational to the point where in 1996 was the last act of terrorism against the United States. That was the Khobar barracks bombing. And when I sat down to write this book, I wasn't quite sure what I was going to write. But I had notes from 30 years of following Iran and dealing with it and serving in the Middle East. It became very clear to me that this was a power that we could deal with and compromise with. Unlike the Sunni Muslims who are scattered around the world and there's no central organization. And it was very clear to me, it is a complete conviction I say this, it's a country we should ally with rather than fight.
And, of course, you point out we have this image of the Islamo-fascist regime there in Iran. This is what we're told over and over again. And yet the mullahs are not in total power or in control, are they?
Well, you know, the religious parties hold about 10% of the electoral vote. They're not fascists at all. I mean, Iran is a very peculiar country. Islam, it's an overlay of an older culture, Zoroastrianism, and so forth. And it's not the Iran we see. It's not the Iran we saw in 1979 with the mullahs and taking over the embassy and the rest of it. Yes, they did go through a revolutionary period, but they're through it now. And what we haven't done as Americans is caught up with the new Iran.
And, of course, what you point out is that the real power there seems to reside with the secret police, with the Iranian National Guard, with the Revolutionary Guard, with the military, and certainly the mullahs head the state. But there's a real question where the real power is. And, of course, these people, I'm sure, like most people, would like to live in peace. They just want to have their own Shia society, which is, I think they have a right to. We'll be right back. Of course, you point out in your book that basically the Iranians already control pretty well the southern part of Iraq. Most Americans aren't aware of that, but certainly through their proxies, why they've already taken control. They control the oil there. They control the production. They keep the peace there. And the British occupation of Basra and the surrounding areas was just sort of, well, it really didn't matter much one way or the other, did it?
No, not at all. I mean, this is the Iranians have a soft touch in Iraq. They're obviously not occupying it. They're not sending soldiers across the border. And the Iraqis look at Iran as a country too big to challenge, and they're all more than willing to go along with Iran. I mean, a lot of goods come across the border. The Iranians are a friendly regime. The Americans are going to leave one day, and if the Iraqis, Shia, need to call on somebody, it's going to be Iran. And I think that, you know, the Iranians have learned their lesson over the years, the lesson of imperialism, and they're not going to occupy Iraq. But nonetheless, they will have a longer enduring voice than we will.
And, of course, you point out that if we want to change that area, we're going to have to stay there 50 to 100 years. And we're going to have to invest trillions of dollars and innumerable more lives there. And what will we accomplish when we get done?
Absolutely nothing at all. I mean, we could stay in Iraq. We could stay in Afghanistan for 50 years. All that money we would be spending there, we could be, you know, having this economy recover. But it's a war we're ultimately not going to win. We do not make good imperialists at all. Americans don't like it. You know, at this point, the feeling is we've gone into Iraq. We've given the Iraqis a chance for democracy. In fact, it's turned out a lot better than I hoped in 2004 and 2005, but now it's time to leave, and we should leave the region with friends and not enemies. And I think that Iran, being a military power, yes, it's an unpleasant regime, and I wouldn't want to put my fate, you know, in Tehran's hands, but it is more rational and more dependable than somebody like Osama bin Laden or even Saudi Arabia, which, as we all recall, well, they provided 15 of the hijackers on 9/11.
All right, because see, one of the major points that you make is that basically the Shia as a religion are really, of course, they're a people, a tribal people in many respects, and yet, of course, they have this crescent of Shias all throughout the Middle East, going all the way over into Lebanon, down the Persian Gulf, and these people have been oppressed for 1,300 years. They just want to be left alone. They want to be able to have their own society. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Robert Baer, 25 years over there in the Middle East. Certainly had run the opposition to the Iranian government for many years. Has a fascinating story. If you haven't read his other books, which we actually carry See No Evil, because we think it's probably one of the most important books that will help you understand what's going on in the Middle East. But certainly his latest book, entitled The Devil We Know, goes into the background of Iran. It goes into the background of the Shia people. Most people don't understand the difference between a Sunni and a Shia. And of course, the attitude of the Shia, that they just want to be not be dominated by the Sunnis. They want to have their own society. And right now they have it in Iran. But would you like to pick up that story? Because I think most people don't understand the background of the difference between the Shia and the Sunni, the Muslims, and why the Shia feel so strongly they do not want to be occupied, they want to be free.
Well, the Shia, you know, it's a division, it's a religious division we as Americans don't understand all that well because, I mean, we just haven't spent our time studying it. But it is a division greater than or deeper than Protestantism and Catholicism. And I look at the Shia almost as Catholics because they're very disciplined. It's a single sect that has a leadership that is in Qom and in Najaf in Iraq. And the Shia, well, let me put it this way, the Sunni can get on the internet and find a surah from the Quran and basically go out and commit an act of violence. The Shia cannot do that. They need to go to an imam or an ayatollah to seek permission. They do not freelance. I almost look at the Sunni, and this is an exaggeration, but they're anarchists. They can carry out violence anytime they feel like it. But a Shia can't. I mean, you look at Lebanon in 2006, and there was this fear in this country that there was going to be terrorism against us from Hezbollah, which is a Shia party, and there wasn't, because the head of Hezbollah, Hassan Nasrallah, said, no, do not touch Americans. And during that 34-day war, no Americans were touched. I mean, this is extraordinary. You'd never see that happen in Sunni Pakistan, where just the other day an American UN worker was kidnapped. So if Iran gives the orders to cease violence against the United States, they will be followed. But will be followed. But anybody, you know, in Sunni Islam, there's nobody to give that order, and it wouldn't be followed in any case if there were.
Well, Chris, you make the point that basically that Iran works through proxies. I mean, Hezbollah is their proxy. Probably Hamas is their proxy. They have terrorist organizations that are their proxy. But, of course, they have become much more moderate. They, although originally they espoused terrorism shortly after the mullahs had come to power, everything seems to have changed. They become much more moderate, much more pragmatic. And they're certainly much more willing to make concessions because their ultimate goal is to live in peace. Would that be a fair assessment?
I think it's fair, and I think that we spend too much of our attention looking at Hamas through Israel's eyes. But look at Hamas in 1994, and I spent a lot of time talking to the founders of Hamas and the suicide bombers in Israeli prisons. In 1994, 1995, they started blowing up buses, restaurants, indiscriminately killing Israelis. Today, they're firing rockets. The suicide bombers have sort of ended under Iran's influence, and they've fired rockets. Now, people are dying of these rockets, but the situation, relatively, they're better off in Israel than having rockets landing out in fields. This is still a very unfortunate situation. It could get a lot worse, but for the moment, this discipline that Iran brings to Hezbollah and Hamas has actually reduced the violence, and it's turned it more in a military way. But at the end of the day, I think that a military power like Iran can negotiate a settlement, whereas somebody like Al-Qaeda, you can't even talk to. You can't even find them, let them talk to them. So that's why I look at this situation and say, all right, if we have to have an ally in the Middle East, and no ally is going to be perfect there, it's going to be Iran rather than the extremists.
And, of course, you point out, you know, that you tell the story of one of the terrorists there, the fellow who actually hijacked a couple of airplanes, and he really committed all sorts of acts of violence, and yet eventually he was told he just couldn't continue being a terrorist. He obeyed the orders that came from Iran. He acted as their proxy. They didn't communicate with him at all. They told him what needed to be done. But when the time finally came that Iran was going to stop terrorism, he obeyed and obeyed faithfully, and how was he actually killed back in 2008?
Well, he was killed, I would imagine he was killed by the Israelis. They put an explosive in the headrest of a car, and as soon as he got in the car, they command detonated it. The Israelis probably used Palestinian agents to do this, because it happened in Damascus, where Israel doesn't operate with any facility. So the Israelis had good reason to get rid of him. But it's absolutely right. And this man had taken American hostages. He killed the chief of station in Beirut, Bill Buckley. He killed Colonel Higgins. He had hijacked airplanes in cold blood. Himself had shot a security guard, a Kuwaiti airplane, and so forth. But in 1996, when he went to the Iranians, and he said, let's set up bombs in Europe, because now it's an important campaign. We can, to liberate Palestine and so forth, or liberate Lebanon. And the Iranians said, no, you are going to come back, you're going to go to Damascus, and you're going to train. And he fell into line. This man was a mass murderer, but he fell into line and obeyed orders. I'll say this over and over again, you will not see this among Sunni Muslims. They do not obey orders.
But the Shia Muslims do, and they will take the orders from their superiors, and their superiors, of course, we're told Ahmadinejad is this radical nutcase over there, but Ahmadinejad is simply a front man for the real power structure, isn't he?
He is. For Khamenei, the supreme leader, And he's one, he's the man that can take Iran to war or make peace with the United States. Ahmadinejad has an economic portfolio. He was the mayor of Tehran. But he's just sort of the ugly face of Iran. He's an embarrassment to many Iranians. At the same time, he's a lightning rod for Iranian politics, and the Iranians don't mind it. He's probably going to be gone this year in elections. If he's not, he's still not the man this administration would need to talk to. It'd be Khamenei. And going along with Khamenei, the supreme leader, would be a informal military politburo, which is bunch of organizations, but they're powerful generals that rule the country. They're like a junta in South America.
And of course, the problem is that America has been doing everything they could to antagonize Iran rather than sit down and talk to them. They've made all sorts of impossible demands, like you give up a promise you'll never try to build a nuclear bomb. We won't even talk to you until you make that statement. Well, once you've already made that statement, then what's the sense of talking? Rather than trying to come up with some sort of an intelligent approach to Iran, it would appear to me that American foreign policy has been aimed at one thing, and that is antagonizing Iran. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, it's fair, but as you said before in the introduction, is that, we have tried to paint Iran in terms of Islamofascism, which is a very unfortunate term. It causes us to misunderstand the Middle East completely. On the editorial pages, the New York Times and the Washington, it's got nothing to do with Islamofascism. I mean, it's an entirely different animal we're talking about here. So if we reduce Iran to Islamo-fascist country, there's no way to deal with it. What we can do with Iran, as we can with any power in the world, including Russia and China, is bargain and trade. We don't tell the Chinese or the Russians, give up your nuclear weapons, and then only then will we talk to you. And secondly, I'm not even sure that the Iranians are even going to push hard for a nuclear weapon. By our focusing on this weapon, which they may postpone building for 20 years, again, we are missing the crux of the potential relationship between the United States and Iran. I can assure you, I've spent a lot of time in Iran, I've spent a lot of time dealing with Iranians, that the Iranians do not intend to launch a nuclear strike on Israel and be crushed in retaliation by Israeli nuclear weapons. Those people are more rational.
And that is the thing that's always puzzled me. Why do we keep talking about that, Iran's going to attack Israel, when it would be totally illogical for them to do it? And as you pointed out in your book, they're pragmatic. The leaders have suddenly become very, very pragmatic. And, of course, they don't want to go to war with America. They don't want to go to war with Israel. And I think that a lot of what Ahmadinejad says is just a lot of rhetoric to get people all upset. And what are your thoughts on that? It seems that Ahmadinejad's
almost like a
caricature. In fact, I often like to say he looks like maybe he was recruited over in the Bronx and taught to speak Arabic and taken over there and given this little coat and grow a little bit scruffy beard. But he's a caricature. He's saying all the wrong things, almost as if trying to antagonize the Israelis and frighten the Americans.
He does it for pure political theater and to give it. He loves the attention. The man is an egoist, and he likes to be in the newspapers. He likes the world to look at him as some sort of menace to peace. And he was elected president in a very skewed process, but nonetheless he was elected president, and the Iranians have to live with it. But the fault is ours for paying any attention at all. I mean, what we should be paying attention to are Iran's new rockets, what they're doing in Gaza, what are their demands for a settlement in Gaza, what are their demands for a settlement in Lebanon, and dealing with those head on rather than paying any attention Ahmadinejad. We're just wasting our time.
Well, don't you think that it would be possible to work out an agreement with Iran that would guarantee the safety of the state of Israel, and yet, of course, to try to bring stability to Iraq and that whole of the Middle East? In fact, one of the points you pointed out is we're going to have to partition Iraq. You're going to have a Sunni area. You're going to have a Shia area. Why would we ever think that we could combine? It's just like taking oil and water. They just don't mix. And the Shias and the Sunnis will never live together in peace unless under a dictator like Saddam Hussein. We'll be right back. And I thought that was, it's, you know, I've always thought that there should be a partitioning of Iraq, and yet suddenly our leaders are doing everything they can to try to force the people to live together who hate one another.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away, and the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com.
That is, you know, much of it depends on the price of oil. If the price of oil, for instance, if we went into a prolonged recession, the price of oil stayed at $10 a barrel simply because demand fell through the floor, the Saudis would be in trouble. They would run into enormous debt. They wouldn't be able to pay off the tribes, and Saudi Arabia would be at risk of collapsing as the rest of the Gulf would. It's something we couldn't really hold together. There's not enough money to hold that part of the world together because Saudi Arabia, in a large sense, is a country with artificial borders as well. It's not a popular regime. It's a regime that's held on thanks to paying enormous subsidies to dissident tribes.
But doesn't it also certainly oppress its people? It doesn't allow any dissent. How morally can we possibly say Saddam Hussein was cruel and ruthless and not say the same thing about the Saudi rulers?
Well, it's hypocritical double standards. I mean, they're both ruthless. And we picked on Saddam for, you know, personal reasons almost. I think that George Bush went into that war in 2003 because he believed that the Iraqis tried to kill his father. I think they had a lot to do with it, and that's not to mention the neocons. And by the way, it's not true. The Iraqis did not try to kill his father in Kuwait in 1991. It's just wrong. It didn't happen.
In other words, there was really no good reason then to go in and kill all the Iraqis. And there must be tremendous antagonism towards America. I'm sure they're glad we got rid of Saddam, but isn't there a tremendous resentment from the occupation because we are occupiers of their country? I don't think they want us there.
Nobody wants to be occupied. Look at Blackwater, shot down, killed 17 people in cold blood. I mean, could you imagine that happening in San Francisco, a foreign government driving through the streets of San Francisco or New York City and shooting 17 Americans and not having total, complete outrage. And the surprise is that Washington didn't see this problem. You simply cannot have private mercenaries, and there's tens of thousands of them in Iraq running around with automatic weapons above the law shooting people. It would annoy it. It would infuriate anybody. So We mishandled this so badly from day one that it's a miracle that Iraq is this stable at this point.
Well, of course, they're saying that they're turning the control of Iraq over to the Iraq Army and the Iraq Police Force, but we're still going to keep most of our troops there, aren't we? Or are we going to just transfer them up to Afghanistan?
Well, I mean, Afghanistan's going to be Obama's Vietnam. Afghanistan is an unwinnable war as well. I mean, I think Afghanistan is going to make Iraq look tame in comparison simply because it's a country that just rejects any foreign troops ever and has for thousands of years since Alexander the Great. We will not lose any battles there, but it'd just be one long war of attrition, and we'd be spending millions upon millions of dollars every day for nothing.
Well, because the problem is we don't have the millions of dollars to spend. We're already borrowing a couple of billion dollars every single day, probably much more than that, because you know they've actually increased the monetary base here, and it's a tremendous amount of money that we're spending. They're talking about the deficit this year, $1.3 trillion. That's just the deficit, and that's probably a very, very conservative estimate. I mean, great nations have been destroyed by going to war and going bankrupt. Could that happen to America?
Just like it happened to Imperial Spain, yes, absolutely. If we continue in the Middle East propping up the status quo, it will turn into trillions upon trillions of dollars, and it will not result in anything concrete, and it could go on for 30 years. And frankly, we need that money. We need that money here. I've spent my entire adult life in the Middle East, and I have personally been involved in coup d'etats, holding governments together, and I've been seeing the best diplomats the United States ever produced, and they've all failed. And it's not because they're incompetent. It's because it's a situation we cannot fix ourselves.
Then why are we still there? Why don't we just take our losses and pull out? I mean, that would seem to be the logical thing to do.
You got a president that has a mandate to get out of Iraq, but not Afghanistan, and the people sitting around him are terrified that if he pulled out of Afghanistan, Al Qaeda would come back and he would look weak. At this point, I tend to become a bit, let me put it this way, over the top. But I'd say, if we leave Afghanistan, Qaeda comes back, you simply bomb them. B-2 bombers, you know. The Qaeda camp, and you take care of it from the air. But it's this Washington gridlock, political gridlock, that is causing the problems.
But of course, Saudi Arabia, our good friends in Saudi Arabia, well, they were financing Al Qaeda. We'll be back in just a moment with Mr. Baer. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Robert Baer, author of a book called The Devil We Know. And certainly, there's been a great deal of evidence, at least as far as I'm concerned, I'd like your thoughts on it, but that Pakistan, and certainly at least the ISI in Pakistan, was very favorable to the Taliban, was very favorable to the Al-Qaeda, and the same thing with Saudi Arabia. They were the original financiers of that movement. So, I mean, certainly if we're concerned about them, shouldn't we be concerned about the people who finance them?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, ISI until today is in touch with the Taliban and supporting them. There's whole wings of it that are supporting Al-Qaeda in Quetta, southwest Pakistan. I was just spent half of last year in Pakistan, and I met the man who invented Bin Laden, ISI. He's still in the ISI. And the way they look at it is they're supporting Sunni fundamentalism as a, you know, as a big great wall against Iran, against the Shia, against controlling Afghanistan. They look at this as a strategic problem, an existential problem, that if they don't support Sunni extremists, Pakistan will fall apart. They have their reasons for doing this. They do it secretly. Saudi Arabia is the same way. By supporting extremists, they feel that they're going to be able to hold Saudi Arabia together. And they're not doing this because they're violent, evil people. They think it's in their political benefit, and it ultimately, their survival depend upon it. But the point is that we are the ones that suffer the violence unnecessarily in this politics, and we are afraid, again, going back to the addiction of oil, to confront these powers or just get up and leave.
Well, I certainly agree with you. My concern is that, you know, that we know we have oil off our coast. There's massive pools of oil down the Ventura Basin on the west coast here. We're not allowed to drill that. We're not allowed to develop so much of the oil that is here in the form of shale or oil sands up in Canada to be more expensive. But at least we would have adequate oil supplies, and we wouldn't have to be over there and, you know, halfway around the world fighting and killing and have our boys killed. And how many citizens do you think Iraqi have lost? I mean, we hear all sorts of figures. Some people say it could even be as many as a million people, civilians and military, have died. Is that a realistic figure, or is that an exaggeration?
It's a bit of an exaggeration, but not too much. There's been hundreds of thousands of Iraqis killed, nearly 2 million displaced. It's been a catastrophe for nothing.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening is Robert Baer. About 25 years in the CIA?
21 years.
All
in the Middle East.
In fact, George Clooney made a movie based upon the first book, which was See No Evil. It was Syriana, I think, was the title of it.
Syriana, yeah.
Now, it didn't follow the text very well, but the material, the basic idea was very, very close, but the script had very little to do with the book. But you were the consultant on that. Well, basically, we were just talking to Bob about the fact that, you know, the Saudis and the Pakistani are both backing the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. And yet, of course, we're staying over there to fight them on one hand, and yet we're keeping the Saudis in power, and we're financing the Pakistanis and trying to keep them in power, and yet they're financing our enemies. And so much of it goes on just doesn't make sense. And then, of course, suddenly I was asked the question about the casualties in Iraq. Now, remember, men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And, I mean, we're responsible for the people who die over there because we went in without any decent or good reason, other than maybe George Bush was angry because he thought that Saddam had tried to kill his dad over in Kuwait. But how many hundreds of thousands do you think may have died? Some people have said 1 million. Do you think that's an exaggeration?
I think it's a bit of an exaggeration. I don't think it's quite 1 million. There is no accurate count of the number of people that have died in Iraq. And, you know, you can't, the Pentagon doesn't know, and the aid agencies don't know.
Maybe we don't really want to know because we might feel guilty about what's happened over there.
Well, what about the billions of dollars in cash that were sent in planes? That were just, no one knows where it went. You know, you go to London today, and the expensive apartments and the department stores and the jewelry stores, you hear Iraqi accents.
Right.
Because it was all stolen. We're talking about $100 billion, which was stolen in aid money. None of it made it into the Iraqis.
Of course, we like to tell the story right now. Ben Bernanke, the head of the Fed, has given away $2 trillion, and he won't tell anybody where it's gone. $2 trillion, and he won't tell anybody where it's gone. It sounds to me like those Iraqis or pikers next to certain people in the highest echelons of our government. But that's on another subject. Well, would you want to take any calls? We could. I'm sure we have callers out there that would like to talk to you, ask some questions. Would that be all right?
Sure.
Our telephone number then is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. One of the things that's always intrigued me was in your first book, See No Evil. In the preface, you quoted one of your friends who talked to a very high official in the CIA who'd made a reference to the fact, and I'm just ad-libbing, but something to the effect that when the dust finally settles after 9-1-1, the American people will not feel this was a failure of intelligence, but a success of intelligence. So what was he talking about, do you know?
I think it's a pure, political ploy, or trying to cover up the fact that it was the CIA that failed. It was the CIA was aware two hijackers arrived in California in January 2000, didn't tell the FBI. If they had told the FBI, they could have done a full field investigation. And they did finally tell the FBI about these two guys in August 2001, but there wasn't enough time for the FBI to run them down. I mean, this was not a plot. This is not a conspiracy. It was pure incompetence. And the fact that no one has been held accountable for 9/11 is outrageous. I mean, I'm very supportive of the CIA, but when it fails, you have to have a full investigation, and it has to be made public and not just simply covering it up.
I agree with you. Well, let's go to Ron, who's calling us from Richland, Washington. Hi, Ron. How are you doing?
Dr. Stan, I just wanted to talk to your guest. I read some pretty disparaging comments about some section chief in Baghdad, the CIA section chief, who was notorious for his drunkenness and womanizing and such, and surrounding himself with people like that.
I don't think that was Bob Baer.
No, it wasn't me.
Well, I was just wondering, is that kind of typical of what's going on, or why can't they clean up their house?
Well, it's not as bad as, any time you see the three letters CIA in a scandal, everybody pays attention. Don't ask me why. It's, the mystery behind the door. Listen, they do clean up their problems. The fact is they clean them up too slowly. We had this guy in Algiers who was drugging and raping women. He's going to be indicted. It does happen. I think my problem with the CIA today is just too timid, and they have too many people that are sitting behind desks. They're just serving time and are slowing things down. CIA's got a lot of problems, and they need to be fixed, but drunkenness isn't the biggest one.
Yeah, in fact,
I heard that this guy was going to get promoted or something, and there's some of them.
Yeah, he's going to be head of the counterterrorism center. I know the guy. His friends say, it's not true, and the Congress hates him. The analysts at the CIA hate him, so they're out to get this guy. It's almost like university politics or something.
Okay, fine. Well, thanks very much. Let's go to Mike, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Mike, do you have a question for our guest?
I'm very curious about the installation of Saddam Hussein into his position of power by the CIA or us as the West or however that came to be.
Well, let's ask the question. Did the United States back Saddam Hussein during the 1980s and send him money and to give him the wherewithal to build the chemical and the biological weapons? Is there any truth to that?
Well, better than that, the CIA saved Saddam Hussein in the middle of the Iraqi war because what we did was give him satellite photography, the CIA did, of Iranian preparations for offensives. If we had just let these offensives occurred, he would have lost to Iran. He would have lost at least Basra, south of the country. So, yes, we did keep him in power. And, yes, the Reagan and Bush administration did give him loans, which kept him going during the war. We encouraged the French to arm Saddam. Yes, we did keep him in power.
I remember in your first book, See No Evil, you commented that you'd never met an Iraqi who didn't believe that and this was during the 1990s when you were there in the north, in Kurdistan, but correct me if I'm wrong, but you said you'd never met an Iraqi who didn't believe the United States was keeping Saddam in power. Was that a correct interpretation?
Absolutely. I mean, the Iraqis believed that if the CIA wanted to, or at least the military, that we could have gone in there and removed him. And so that all our rhetoric was just some cover for some, you know, evil conspiracy. And in fact, there were Americans through the 90s flying to Baghdad, and some of them had very close connections with the White House who were doing business with Saddam. So if you see somebody walking out of the West Wing of the White House, getting on an airplane and flying to Baghdad, well, they actually fly to Amman and drive to Baghdad, it made the Iraqis wonder. We kept on getting the questions, why are these American businessmen close to the Clinton administration showing up in Baghdad if Clinton didn't support them? In fact, Clinton didn't. This was just sort of a couple of dirty deals, but it undercut our mission to try to get rid of Saddam.
One of the places you told about an Iraqi general who had actually contacted the Iraqi military wanted to overthrow Saddam Hussein, and of course you contacted through your channels with the State Department, and our government refused to back the Iraqi generals who wanted to get rid of Saddam Hussein. People often said, well, you know, why doesn't the military get rid of him? Well, they tried to, and it sounded from reading your book as if there were people in our government who were that interested in getting rid of him. Is that a correct interpretation?
I think that in the Clinton administration, there was two policies. There was the public policy, we'd like to see Saddam go, and then there was the private policy, which was held just in the Oval Office. Well, you know, he's better than chaos, so let's leave him in place. I mean, I spent a lot of time at the White House, and they said, well, if there's a coup d'etat against Saddam, who exactly is going to replace him, and what's that government going to look like, and can we meet these guys? There was an answer to none of those questions. But my feeling now all these years is they just didn't want the chaos of Iraq. So these generals, as they popped up, weren't supported. Now, my feeling was we would have been better off if we had simply cut off the head of the regime, Saddam Hussein, and two sons, and a couple other intelligence officers, and we would have kept the system in place. It would have avoided an invasion. Now, whether the CIA could have actually carried this out, so I'm just in the middle of it. I still don't know whether we could have carried it out or not, is another question. But I think we'd better off in an invasion.
If we say that we didn't want the chaos of his removal through that time,
we got chaos anyhow, didn't we?
Doing that anyhow.
We sure did. Anything else, Mike, before we let you go?
Nothing else. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, fine. We've got John calling from Vancouver, British Columbia. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. Hi, John. You have a question for our guest.
Yes, I do have a question. And just hang on, Bernard. I have a friend of mine that wants to ask a question directly to the CIA agent, if he could, please. Go ahead, Bernard.
Yeah, I was just wondering about the oil. Was the oil in Iraq, is it being sold in U.S. dollars or is it being sold in euro dollars right now?
It's being sold in U.S. dollars, but it's a very corrupt sale of oil. Much of the money is going to Iranian mullahs and Iranian businessmen. If oil's selling for $40 a day, the commissions being paid privately are $10 per barrel. So little of the money actually ends up in Iraqi coffers.
Maliki himself. I'm sorry, you said that Maliki is making it, or who's getting the money?
Maliki's getting it. Maliki and his party, he financed this election through oil bribes.
Okay. You commented that the Iranians really control about a third, I think it was, of the oil in the southern part of Iraq, and that's the greatest part of the oil there. So how are they actually funneling that oil to the Iranians?
Well, they're building a pipeline as we speak. They're building a pipeline to Abadan, where they're going to load it on tankers. So what they're going to do is pass part of the major Basra export networks and send it through Iran. I mean, if Iraqi oil transits Iran, in my book, they pretty much have control over it because they can cut that pipeline off anytime they want or demand higher fees.
And, of course, would the people in southern Iraq, we're talking about the Shia population down around Basra and Kabbalah, would they really rather be aligned with Tehran, or would they want to be an independent state but just friendly with Tehran? Would they want to have their own government, or would they want to be a satellite of Iran?
I think ultimately they want to have their own independent government, be friendly with Iran, but for this transition period, which could last 20 or 30 years, they're going to have to defer to Iran in a lot of major problems. Because Iraq is going to need a lot of help, and the Iranians are offering a hand. Now, the difference, of course, is that the Iranians are Persians or Indo-Europeans, and the Iraqis are Arabs. They're a Semitic people. So there will always be those divisions. But right now, they're looking to Tehran for all sorts of things. I mean, you know, this Iranian opposition party, the MEK, is being thrown out of Iraq at the behest of Tehran. And Maliki has said, yes, you're going to close down these bases, and they are. I mean, every day you see Maliki, you know, looking to, he drives to Tehran to get advice and back and forth. And the day the war started in Gaza, he was in Tehran. It was not an accident.
And really, of course, the backing of Hamas really comes primarily from Iran, doesn't it? Aren't they the ones who are supplying the sophisticated missiles?
They supply the Grad rockets. They supply money. They're supplying the reconstruction of Gaza. There's a lot of sympathy in Tehran for Hamas. My personal feeling is the Iranians don't particularly, you know, are close to the Palestinians, but they get so much advantage out of this by portraying themselves as the power that stands up to the United States, the anti-colonial power. And it goes a long way in the Middle East.
And don't you, your theme of your book is basically what we need is to sit down to negotiate with the Iranians, come up with an agreement, get them to guarantee the sovereignty of Israel, and then see what we can do. Give them the hegemony in that part of the world. We certainly don't want to stay there indefinitely.
Why not? I mean, I would rather, if we could find a friend, or at least people we have a common interest with, and if we do have a common interest in Iraq and Afghanistan. You look at the day before yesterday, NATO, an American commander, said it's okay for NATO to send its supplies through Iran to Afghanistan. And as the supply routes in Pakistan are closed, Iran may be the only way to supply our troops. I mean, this is an extraordinary statement for the United States. And it's really telling how important Iran is, how, you know, centrally situated it is in that part of the region, and how they want to cooperate.
Well, it should be nice if we could develop a peace arrangement with Iran and then bring our boys home from Afghanistan and bring our boys home from that part of the world, because we'll accomplish nothing other than the bankruptcy of our nation. Well, John, did you have anything else to say? John,
well,
from
I have one other question.
Okay, go right ahead.
Once again, it's directed to the CIA agent. I was wondering if a lot of the arms, these Qassam rockets that are being supplied to the Gaza Strip from that are coming in from Iran, I was just wondering, does Iran expect any monetary remuneration for those arms, or do they just sort of give it to the Palestinians gratis? I mean, what's going on?
They give them for free. There's very little money in Gaza. And in fact, it's at a very little cost to Iran. I mean, if Iran gives $200 or $300 million to Hezbollah and $100 to Hamas, I mean, this is a drop in the bucket in terms of their oil revenues, and it's all for free. And what the Iranians are doing here is saying, look at the Saudis and the Jordanians and the Egyptians. They're not supporting fellow Muslims. They're just sitting back and not giving Hamas any money, not helping in any way diplomatically. And what we're doing here is by, you know, not stopping this conflict, we're undermining Saudi Arabia, which, you know,
wow.
No matter what you feel about the Saudis, is not going to help.
And basically what Iran is trying to do is become the leader of the Islamic world. And, even though that they will never be able to be completely at peace with the Sunni Muslims, at least, of course, they would be, you know, saying, well, we Muslims should stand against the oppressors, and that oppressor is the United States. They are occupying our land, and the trouble is we are occupying their land. This is almost just like a return of the Crusades, because nobody likes to hear that here, but I don't think we have any business over there telling them how to live their lives. Do you, Bob?
No, they successfully portrayed as colonialists.
Right.
Americans don't feel like colonialists, but they have won that ideological propaganda battle, and they've done it well.
They certainly have. Well, John, anything else you want to say? We're going to have to go to a quick break.
No, we're just really, really excited that you have a CIA agent for a
thanks so much.
For a guest. So really excited, and we say God bless you.
Thanks so much.
One other question.
Oh, I'm sorry, John. I didn't mean to cut you off there. If you had another question, you can call back, and we'll be glad to take it. But, Bob, we've got about 3 minutes before I have to let you go, and I know it's...
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look. And I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
With food prices soaring to all-time highs, as the dollar continues to fall in value, what can you and your family do to guarantee that fresh, nutritious vegetables will make it to your dinner table? Garden in a Can. Garden in a Can is your source for premium, long-term storable seeds. Garden in a Can is ready when you are. Plant them now or store them for when you really need them. There are 16 large, hermetically sealed, non-hybrid, open-pollinated packets of seeds, along with detailed planting instructions sealed in a can for ultimate long-term protection. Garden in a Can. It's that simple. Fresh, healthy, easy. Only $69.95 for over a half acre of safe, fresh vegetables. Ready when you are. Stop procrastinating and start preparing with Garden in a Can. For more details, visit GardenInACan.com today. That's GardenInACan.com or call 866-598-7396, 866-598-7396.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
We want to remind our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We want to maintain our outlets of about 60, over 60 outlets now every single week. where people at least are hearing some of the truth, because you're not going to get it through the regular media. The regular media was bought up a long time ago by the people who want to bring about a world government operating through the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, the Trilateral Commission. These are the people who control the wealth of the world. These are the people who are at the present time plunging us into a financial Armageddon. They know exactly what they're doing. They are not trying to address the problem. I mean, if you look at the latest bailout bill, I mean, what do you think money for treating STDs is going to do, sexually transmitted diseases? How is that going to help solve the financial problem? If you look at the list of things that they're giving money to, none of them address the problem, which was, of course, the defective mortgages that were sold all throughout the world. With AAA ratings, with guaranteed insurance companies so that the banks couldn't possibly lose, and I don't blame them for buying them. They honestly believed that they had an insurance policy. They believed these were legitimate loans, and they were not, and it was all orchestrated by what I would call the invisible government, and they knew what they were doing. Why? Because by bringing down the financial situation of the world, by bringing down the world economy, collapsing the financial system, they would be able to bring about a world government. That has always been their goal. It's always been their objective. If you have not read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, it was written, what, 5-6 years ago, you need to get it. No, it's actually pretty close to 9 years ago now. Anyway, it's still a classic. Brotherhood of Darkness, you can get it by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you can't afford it, go up on my website at radioliberty.com and just go to the videos and simply scroll down to Brotherhood of Darkness. You can watch the talk from whence the book came. And then you want to hear our talk on the forbidden secret, because there is a secret that has been passed down by secret societies for 5,000 years. And it's a rather shocking thing when you realize it really is true. And you'll see it exemplified and demonstrated there on the back of the dollar bill. We've got a great new DVD. It's called The Eye of the Phoenix. The Eye of the Phoenix, put out by our good friend Chris Ruddy, goes into the emblems on the back of the dollar bill and how, of course, they have evolved. And of course, people want to tell you the Christian emblems. Don't believe it for a minute. Certainly they will put out programs on the History Channel and certainly on the Discovery Channel to try to discredit people who want to tell you what this is all about. But there really are occultists, people who are deeply involved in the occult, as was Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the President of the United States, during the 1930s, who put that emblem on the back of the dollar bill because he was deeply involved in the occult. And, of course, his Secretary of Agriculture, Henry Wallace, was a theosophist, which, of course, is a Luciferian organization. Henry Wallace was a disciple of Nicholas Roerich. And, of course, this DVD goes into the background of Roerich. And this whole idea, back in the 1930s, of bringing about this one world government, this new secular order, the Novo Ordo Seclorum. Novo Ordo Seclorum, described on the back of the dollar bill. And you really want to watch this DVD. We think it's excellent. You'll certainly want to see Chris's other DVDs on the secret mysteries of America's beginning, the riddles in stone, and there really is the architecture of our nation's capital, all things pointing to the occultists who were working here when America was established to one day use America's wealth and financial power to bring about a world government. That's what it's always been about. And the Christians certainly were here. They were concerned. In fact, that's why they had to hide these emblems. They could not let the people know what it was really all about, so they hid the emblem on the back of the Great Seal from 1782 up until 1935. Please pray for Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring, and I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Barry Samus. And Barry is an Israeli citizen. He's an Israeli patriot. He had written for many years about the corruption that was going on at the highest levels of the Israeli government, and then, of course, because of the threats on his life, why he was forced to flee the country. And, of course, it's to our advantage, because now we can call on Barry on a regular basis to be our guest, and tonight, well, what are we going to be talking about tonight, Barry?
We will be redeeming last week's promise of going over the case of Jonathan Pollard and what really happened.
All right, fine. I think, of course, for those people who don't remember, Jonathan Pollard, Pollard was an Israeli spy. He was working as a clerk in, I think, in naval intelligence or some government agency. And, of course, he was taking classified information and sending it to our ally in Israel. He shouldn't have been doing it. It was an act of spying. It was not something that was aimed at hurting America. The Israelis simply wanted to know what America was doing, but that doesn't justify what he did. But it doesn't justify keeping him in jail for over 20 years now, with no hope of ever getting out of prison. The question is, why is Jonathan Pollard, of course, was relaying information to an ally of America, sent to prison for such a long period of time? So with that as the background, Barry, you pick up the story.
Right. I'll dive in just before one little thing. I've been getting Israeli reports that Hezbollah wants to hit an Israeli facility, probably in Europe, on Election Day, which is February 11th. Just keep that in mind. There's very high security for February 11th. Now back to Pollard. Now, what happened is that there are lots of Israelis who don't like Pollard's, well, so-called wife. It was never a legal marriage, but they think they're married. And a couple of ladies called me up, again, because of the Rabin book, it led in funny directions. And they hired me with one primary motive. They wanted to know the truth, truth that the official Pollard organization was not trying in any respect to illuminate us about why Pollard is sitting in prison still. This was about 6 years ago, so he'd been in there 15 years or so. And again, there are numerous cases of spies for not Russia is what it comes down to. That's what it comes down to. The big spies in America were all spying for the KGB, but there are numerous cases of minor spies like Pollard who were released from prison within 5 years. And no one can understand what he's doing in prison and why he got life. So they paid me not a lot of money, but, you know, I never turned down work and I never made a lot of money, so I took it. It was about $1,000 to find out, using my sources, what Paul is still doing in prison. Now, I got really lucky on this, because my former partner, Joel Bainerman, had written a book about the Bush family. It was called Crimes of a President, and he had a chapter on Iran-Contra.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment with Barry Samus. All right, Barry, you pick up the story. You were saying you got lucky. Your partner, Joel Bainerman, had written a book about the Bush family, and he had a chapter there on this pick the story up from there.
Well, Joel Beinerman, the book in its time was very influential. I guess it's close to forgotten now. Time has passed, but it was the first mainstream biography of the Bush family and their very peculiar ties to what I didn't know was the New World Order. I had no idea. In 91 he put out the book what he was talking about. But nonetheless, he had a lot of information about Pollard. And now the reason for that is that Pollard operated in 84 and 85. At the time, Shimon Peres, as usual, by the way, all the rot of Israel, just every single time is traced back to Peres. He was prime minister for 2 years, 84 to 86, in the heart of Pollard. The president was Reagan, but by then, one Hinckley shot had pretty well given him the message that the presidency is not going to be a Reagan presidency, it's going to be a Bush presidency, which, in fact, was the intention of killing Reagan, was to put Bush in power. Reagan got the message by barely surviving. So we've got Peres and Bush in power. Now, first of all, Joel gave me not only his raw notes, he also gave me contacts. Really good ones that he dug up. They just fell into the palm of my hands. And of a special interest is someone who lives in the kibbutz north of Be'er Sheva. His name is William Northrup. Now, Northrup sat in a New York jail for 10 months for attempting to sell arms to Iran. It's a long story, but that will do. And what he told me is that the reason Pollard is sitting is because he was exposing the Bechtel Corporation. So let's leave that there for now. He was absolutely right, by the way. But let's leave that point spoken now. We'll return to it.
All right, fine. Well, I'm going to ask you to hold that off. We're going to have our stations back all on board here in just a moment. So we'll be right back with Barry Sammis. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry's telling us about the background of why Pollard is still in prison, and apparently it has something to do with the Bechtel Corporation. And, of course, Bechtel that was George Shultz, and that was Caspar Weinberger, both of them trilateralists, both up in the echelons of the elite who run our country and also run our government. But you recently on another program, you were saying that Ethan Jonathan Pollard is beginning to talk about the relationship between his imprisonment and Iran-Contra. Would you want to just touch on that before we go on, or do you want to touch
sure,
on the
sure.
end of the program?
Let's. Jonathan Pollard was interviewed on WorldNet Daily, and lo and behold, he quoted me without ever acknowledging me. What he said was that I'm sitting in prison because of Iran-Contra. Well, since you can be sure that he's reading my writing, and the people who write him and see him are telling him to read my writing, what he did was just quote it. It was uncanny. Now, you have to remember something. George Bush Jr. is leaving office, and he pardons people. This year he pardoned a couple of immigration guards on the Mexican border, but the Pollard people were much more interested in getting a pardon for Jonathan Pollard. And they sent, I must have got it 10 times from different people, to phone the White House and demand, request, whatever, that George Bush pardon Jonathan Pollard. Now, I wrote these people back one by one, and I said that Pollard's information was exploited by Shimon Peres to create Iran-Contra, which just about within a hair's breadth brought down the entire Bush dynasty. And you expect him to pardon Pollard. People didn't understand the danger. By the way, Pollard himself didn't understand the danger he was causing to the Bush dynasty. But that's precisely what he did. And I told all these people to waste your breath somewhere else. It's not going to happen. And when it didn't happen, well, all of a sudden, there's a note sent around by major Pollard people. You don't know their names, Rabbi Pesach Lerner. I mean, these are people who have a name in the Jewish world, writing maybe Barry Chambers was right. You know, and that's how I get my acknowledgement. That's about as good as it comes. People understood, not just in the wake of Bush's refusal to pardon him. I mean, these people were thoroughly convinced Bush would pardon him, and that they had clogged the White House switchboard, and they hired 30 new telephone operators just because of Pollard, and they were waiting for the pardon to be announced, and when it wasn't announced, they just flew into such depression, they finally admitted I was right. This was followed by Pollard's own interview for the World Net Daily, where he just simply said, he just simply quoted my book, Shabtai's Fee, Labor Zionism, the Holocaust. When you get home, go to chapter 3, and that's my Pollard chapter. In short, let's go back to the scandal as it's unfolding. Now, what you have to understand is that Israel did, and after Pollard was arrested, November 22nd of 85, there was a tremendous effect on Israeli-American relations, a terrible effect. And there was a commission of inquiry in Israel headed by Abba Eben. Now, Abba Eben was Israel's greatest spokesman, Oxford, educated, smooth-talking, and he was a member of Peres's Labor Party, so I guess Peres felt pretty good that he had a political ally conducting the commission of inquiry. But Eben did it honestly, and he put 85% of the blame on Peres for this operation. He thoroughly denied that this was a rogue operation. It was a government operation. And he said Peres read the reports every morning. And Eben also gave Rabin and Yitzhak Shamir 15% of the blame for hearing about the information. But Peres ran with the information. Now, after this commission of inquiry came out...
Now, the information you're talking about is the information that Pollard was sending over to Israel. Is that right?
Yeah, Peres read it every morning.
Okay, fine.
On his desk, first thing, and he used it. We'll show you how he created Iran-Contra slowly. But just understand, he's already been indicted for this crime. But he spent a week slandering Abba Eben, and Abba Eben never, ever returned to politics again. One of Israel's greatest statesmen, Peres put an end to his career. That was it. For telling the truth, Peres survived. He is now the president of Israel. Abba Eben was removed from politics, and that's the way things go in Israel. It's actually quite a sad situation, but let's not dwell on it. Now, what the big move for Pollard... Remember, Pollard was a civilian clerk at Naval Intelligence. We're not talking about a high-ranking anybody. What we are told, and again, it's what Naval Intelligence does, was that he was following aberrant ships. That is, ships who were not registered and were spotted by satellites in the oceans anyways. That's what naval intelligence does. Those are the kind of ships that smugglers and pirates and who knows what else are on the high seas. They're watched, and that was Pollard's job, to follow them. Pollard found a ship that went from Greece to Yemen. Yemen was the dropping-off point for shipments to Iran. Now, I doubt Pollard had any idea what the ship was for, but he sent it on to Israel. We'll tell you how that was done. But more important, Pollard gave the first evidence of an arms-for-hostage ship. The ship was going from Greece, filled with arms, on its way to Yemen, where the Iranians would pick it up. All of this was followed by Pollard. I assume he got the Iranian ship. I assume he got the ship arriving in Yemen. And what this means, well, that the United States were giving Iran arms, and Israel determined it could only be for hostages being held in Lebanon. Remember, the big hostage-taking of American students ended when Reagan gave his opening speech to the world. As soon as Reagan had his commencement speech, they were released. So the only prisoners were one CIA chief in Beirut and a couple of journalists, and Pollard spotted the arms for hostage boat.
And wasn't that when the president of the American University, wasn't he a prisoner there too?
Yeah, there were a number of prisoners. Right. They had to get released.
Right, and so basically the American government was saying, we will never negotiate with terrorists for hostages. We will never negotiate. All the time they were negotiating. So go ahead.
Buckley was the CIA chief, but it doesn't matter. Minor details. Now, Paris gets this information, and what he should have done was demand that the United States stop arming its enemies then and there. But that's not the way of Shimon Peres. What Peres did is say to himself, we want a piece of this pie. This is a really good pie. So he discovers all this in July of 1984. By September, he sends his delegation to meet with Bush. Now, by the way, John Loftus, who knows me and I know him and we have met, writes in an article that the boat was commissioned by Bush. And so does everyone else who's ever covered this beginning of Iran-Contra. Peres sends a delegation. Well, Yaakov Nimrodi, my friend Joel Bainerman interviewed him. He was the former ambassador to Iran and the publisher of Mariv newspaper. Al Schwimmer, he was the head of the Israel Aircraft Industries. And the person I liked the best was David Kimchi, head of the CFR of Israel. And yes, there is a branch in Israel. They meet with Bush. But now the plot has expanded way beyond that silly little boat. Peres adds his peculiar flavor to what becomes an enormous criminal scam. Now, a little background is necessary. Israel ran the cocaine industry of Colombia in the 1980s. Now, there's a background to this that the Arabs funnel maybe half the world's heroin to Afghanistan and the Bekaa Valley of Lebanon. And I guess Paris just wanted some of the drug money.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Right.
All right, go right ahead, Barry. Certainly you said Paris wanted some of the drug money. Certainly some of
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Because Perez is really into this primarily for the money. He's not help, trying to help Israel. And, of course, the money is laundered certainly through a bank there and somewhere in Florida. But go right ahead.
Well, Perez keeps lots of the money for himself. But in his deal with Bush, he uses the other part of the money to buy arms for the Nicaraguan Contras. They were fighting a little war with the Sandinistas, and Bush really hated the Sandinistas. So in a black operation, he took all this, well, that's why it was called Iran-Contra. The money that the Iranians gave the Israelis ended up buying arms for the Contras. Now, again, there are so many people who have written books that have been ignored about all this connection, it's actually pretty well known. If you read the likes of Terry Reid or even Kathy O'Brien, they will tell you that a lot of heroin, not only just cocaine, went to the Bush family and went to the Clinton family. And, well, this is not the time to go into that. We're rehashing it from poor Jonathan Pollard, whose information is just causing an international crime of enormous, well, it should have brought down Reagan and Bush. They should have all been brought down because of this. And they escaped, and we'll explain that very, very shortly. Now, you've got to remember, Jonathan Pollard had, look, the Navy archives must have a billion files in it. Jonathan Pollard wouldn't have known the codes for the information Israel wanted. Israel needed someone who had, first of all, he had the right to go into the archives. It's called Blue Stripe Clearance. They needed someone high up to get the information to Pollard. Well, that someone was National Security Advisor Robert Bud McFarlane. He was an Israeli spy, and he had the right to go into the Navy archives and pull out the files that Israel needed.
You mean McFarlane was working for the Mossad, for the Israelis?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, now, see, now, this is, I never heard that before. I remember when McFarlane, of course, during the Iran-Contra, tried to commit suicide, he was very depressed, but I never realized he was an Israeli spy. Is there, can that be verified some way?
Esquire magazine, he sued Esquire magazine in 1991 for saying the same thing. And he lost. That's pretty high up. Let's put it this way. There are all kinds of books out there. My friend Joel Bainerman's by Seymour Hersh, who have made the same claim. That McFarlane was, in fact, spying for Israel.
And he was turning the information over to Pollard, and then
Pollard
became...
No.
Oh, he wasn't.
All right, it gets a little tricky. Yes, he was.
All right.
McFarlane gave it to Pollard. Pollard gave it to Rafi Eitan. That was his Israeli handler, but who is, by the way, sitting in the Knesset today. This old man is head of the Pensioners Party. Yes, you're right. That was the... Eitan would tell Pollard the codes he needed. That Pollard could not have gotten into the archives. McFarlane could have. It's a slightly complicated story. It involved a secretary. This we don't have to do. It was McFarlane got the codes that Pollard needed and transferred to Rafi Eitan, who transferred them to Shimon Peres. This is too complicated. Let's keep it simple.
Okay, yeah. Let's keep it simple. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a pretty complicated story.
Okay, fine. So anyway, then Pollard is turning the information he gets from McFarlane. McFarlane, of course, gets off scot-free. He's trying to maintain his reputation. He ends up suing Esquire for saying he was an Israeli spy, and he loses the case. So obviously there's got to be some smoke there. But Pollard's the fall guy for this whole thing. He's simply a code clerk, but the real important people... Get off scot-free. We'll be right back. All right, you go ahead and pick the story up there.
All right. Now, what Pollard transferred to the United States was so hot that after Pollard was arrested... November of 1985, Peres didn't give up on Iran-Contra, even though everyone around him, including McFarlane, McFarlane quit the team when Pollard was arrested. He was terrified. He came back 6 months later, but nonetheless, he was terrified. He'd be named. All of Paris's team, Schwimmer, Kimchi, Nimrodi, they all quit once Pollard was arrested. But Paris had different ideas because Pollard discovered a beauty. Again, Pollard didn't know what he was discovering. I mean, let's not fool around with this. Pollard was a sap. He just passed the stuff on. Nonetheless, Pollard came up with a heck of a piece of information for Paris. And the information was the Bechtel Corporation was running a dual-purpose refinery in Baghdad way back in 1985-6. They had produced a petroleum refinery that could also make poison gas. And this is what Paris discovered from Pollard's information. Now, this is what Paris had to work on. His team had all left him. He got a new partner in crime, Aviram Nir. Just keep that name around. Aviram Nir is about to return, and of course the Americans, with McFarland gone, in came Ollie North and John Poindexter. You had a different team intact, but you had Paris and Bush, and that they were the top of both teams. Now what Paris did is that he performed an act of blackmail so ugly that it got your Attorney General Edwin Meese fired from the government. Paris offered the Bush administration the right. He had a plot. We'll never know if Bechtel was ever going to build an oil pipeline from Iraq to the Gulf of Aqaba on the Jordanian, Aqaba's the Jordanian port on the Gulf of Aqaba. But
hold that thought, Barry. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, where the plot thickens here is that there was a talk of Bechtel building an oil pipeline from Iraq to the Gulf of Aqaba. That is part of the Red Sea that comes up there. It's certainly not the Persian Gulf, but on the other side of Saudi Arabia. And Perez wanted, we'll let Barry tell you more about that. Perez was going to blackmail Bechtel, into giving him a great deal of money so that the pipeline would not be bombed. Well, before we get to that, Barry, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get your books, how they can get your DVDs, how they can get your website. Then we'll get back to the devil's deal that Perez came up with that really, of course, was the essence of Iran-Contra, which most people have never heard of, but go right ahead.
Sure. This information is in my book, Shapai Tzvili, Zionism and the Holocaust. You get it at lulu.com. L-U-L-U. com. There's a little box that says search, write in my name, C-H-A-M-I-S-H. That'll take you to my books. The website is barrychamish.com. Go into the archives. You'll find lots of Pollard material. And if you want me to lecture on it, and this is a very good lecture, and I've never given it. You phone me up, and I'll come and I'll address your group or organization. 904-315-8079. That's 904-315-8079. And you pay the airfare, and that's enough. I can sell the books and the DVDs, and I'll come out ahead. That's it. Now, let's go back. To the problem. Yeah, Paris blackmailed Bechtel that we won't bomb your pipeline for 10 years, forever, even in times of war, if you pay us $700 million over 10 years payable to the Israeli Labor Party. Peres blackmailed Bechtel, which, by the way, is not a great idea because the Secretary of Defense, Caspar Weinberger, was quit Bechtel. He was the vice president there when he entered politics, which lets you know the kind of politics you've got in this country. When your Secretary of State, George Shultz, was also on the board of Bechtel, Bush hired two major executives from Bechtel for his cabinet. And by the way, that when the Bush-Cheney-Rumsfeld gang accused Saddam Hussein of making weapons of mass destruction, they should know the Bechtel was creating it for Saddam Hussein, and these were the weapons of mass destruction he was talking about, and they used them on the Kurds. This was American technology. Peres had got the Bechtel Corporation in a mighty mess. Now, he presented his bribe, but really blackmail. It was sort of like blackmail, extortion, whatever. He presented it to Edwin Meese, your attorney general. Somebody leaked the story about Meese even considering this Peres blackmail, and he had to quit. He had to quit over this pipeline. By the way, Google Edwin Meese pipeline and read this story for yourself. But more to the point, when Pollard was arrested and Weinberger, not to mention Shultz and others, but especially Weinberger, who was the highest ranking executive of Bechtel in the government, heard that it was Pollard who gave the information away, he just determined that Pollard, in his own words, would never see the light of day again. And the story now is the cover-up, and we begin with Amiram Nir. Amiram Nir was told by Peres to clean his office out. Oh, by the way, Nir is the Israeli who went with Ali North to Tehran, and those were the tapes you heard in the Iran-Contra hearing, was North and Nir. He was known to the American intelligence community. Now, Peres fired him because Amiram Nir made a statement to an Israeli newspaper, Ma'ariv, which gave away the show. What he said was that he met George Bush in the King David Hotel in Jerusalem in 87, and they were talking Iran-Contra. Bush denied ever talking about Iran-Contra, but he admitted that he had met Amiram Nir in Jerusalem, but denied they ever spoke about Iran-Contra. Amiram Nir told the truth. They did discuss Iran-Contra, and that means Bush was in on it. And that means that the blame in the Contra hearings wouldn't have stopped at North and Poindexter. It would have gone all the way to Bush, and there would not have been his son in power, and there wouldn't have been the dynasty. If this had played out honestly, Amiram Nir could have brought down George Bush. However, 3 days before he was going to fly to Washington to testify before the Lee Hamilton Committee on Iran-Contra, Amiram Nir had a little accident in Mexico. And Joel was a great help in this. A small plane with four people crashed in Mexico, and three survived, and Amiram Nir didn't. Now, one of the people on the plane was a girl who was working for the Mossad that Joel actually spoke to. She lives in Ontario, and he tracked her down about this accident. All she would say is that he died in a plane crash. not like he was killed or anything. Of course he was killed. I mean, that's, and by the way, Yaakov Nimrodi, again, the former Iranian ambassador, went on Israeli TV and said the CIA did it. He's wrong. The Mossad did it. Peres killed Amiram Nir. And by the way, Peres has got such a record of murder. That's the first person you would look at.
But Barry, don't
gone George Bush safe.
But Barry, don't you think the Mossad and the CIA work very closely together?
Okay, but this was an Israeli hit.
All right, fine.
She was working for the Mossad, and I doubt this was CIA. Although, as I said, if the CIA wanted to protect George Bush, maybe they would have added their 2 cents worth, but it was a hit from the Mossad.
Remember, Chris, George Bush was the chairman of the Central Intelligence Agency there in the mid-70s, so go ahead.
I guess he could have got his licks in, too. All right, it was a very happy murder with both the Mossad, CIA, Bush, and Peres all got their fingers in it. But Amiram Nir is dead. He will not testify that he met with George Bush in Jerusalem at the King David Hotel. George Bush is safe, and everyone gets, well, I wouldn't say they got off everyone, but the big boys are, George Bush is an honored ex-president, and people don't understand really why he is, should not be honored in the extreme. And this was Pollard. Once again, this was all coming from Pollard's information. Pollard ticked off the wrong people. Now, you have to understand that Amiram Nir was not the only murder victim here. We have to talk about Pollard's judge and Weinberger again. Judge Robinson of Florida tried Jonathan Pollard, and they cut a deal. And the deal was that Pollard would spill the beans, tell the whole story, in return for a lesser sentence. And Pollard stuck by this deal. But Weinberger had a special meeting with Judge Robinson where he proves that Pollard's data not only endangered American spies in Russia, but led to the further arming of South Africa to repress blacks. It all came from Pollard, and Judge Robinson sentenced him to life with no parole. Now, Pollard's attorneys went crazy. This was not the deal they cut. So Judge Robinson, in his wisdom, agreed to hear the appeal. But unfortunately, just before the appeal to get Pollard a much lesser sentence was heard, why, Judge Robinson was murdered. Go ahead, folks, look it up. Pollard, Judge Robinson, he died just before the appeal was heard. Next victim. And by the way, when I say murdered, he died of some fake cause just before the Pollard appeal. He granted the appeal. He died for granting that appeal. Now, you have to understand how big the people involved in Iran-Contra really were and how close it came to knocking them down. Now, again, Rafi Eitan, just to remind you, he was Jonathan Pollard's handler. What did the Israeli government do to him? Did they imprison him? Did they fire him for ever working ever again in Israel, for embarrassing the country to the Americans? Not at all. He was given the top position at Israel's biggest manufacturing plant, Israel Chemicals. And who appointed him? None other than Ariel Sharon, then Minister of Industry, and also friends of Paris, to keep his mouth shut. Rafi Eitan, his career was advanced while Jonathan Pollard ended up rotting in prison. He sits in the Knesset today. On behalf of the Pensioners Party. Now, as for Weinberger, who just simply set up Pollard, just simply made sure that he sat in prison for a crime worth 5 years, sat in prison for life, well, he died a happy man because President Bush Sr. pardoned him in 1992, just before he left office. And as I said, the Pollard people really expected this Bush to pardon Jonathan Pollard. When his family pardoned Caspar Weinberger, he never sat a day for his Iran-Contra crimes. Never. Only Pollard sits.
And, of course, Caspar Weinberger was indicted for lying under oath about Iran-Contra, and so he gets pardoned, and poor old Pollard's still in prison. So go ahead.
Now, we can go over the fine points of Pollard, but what I just told you now is, in fact, as close to the truth as anyone has written, and Pollard now is personally quoting me, and I get zero, well, an itty-bitty bit of vindication from this. I guess the vindication comes in knowing I did a good job, and I found, for the people who hired me, why Pollard is sitting in prison. He's sitting in prison for starting Iran-Contra. That's the truth. Now, let's shift. The war of attrition has started in Israel, but I want to talk about Iran still in action and why the United States will never, ever touch Iran. Number one, Hamas tested a missile called the C-802. It's an Iranian-manufactured copy of the Chinese Silkworm missile. Highly accurate, highly powerful. It's got a 160-kilogram warhead. It has a 120-kilometer range. During the Lebanon War of 2.5 years ago, it knocked out the Israeli ship, the Khanit, killed 4 sailors. This is a very, very powerful missile produced by Iran. Now, they've sent another 1,000 to Hezbollah, if not more. But Hamas getting a missile that can do tremendous damage, not only to the Israeli Navy, but also to Tel Aviv. The next round of warfare will be fought with Chinese-Iranian missiles. And here's how we know, here is real politics, the real politics of why America will never attack Iran. The reason is that 90% of Iranian oil is shipped to China. China designed the missile, the C-802, for Iran. China also owns vast quantities of U.S. Treasury bills. They've been pumping up the American economy, and the United States has got wacky plans for them to spend these Treasury bills. They're telling them to buy foreclosed homes and businesses all through America, pick everything up for a penny on the dollar. America is selling its real estate back to China so it won't cash in the Treasury bills. China has told America, in no uncertain terms, Iran is our major oil trading partner. You will not attack Iran. This is real politics, and this is what's going on today. Hamas, Hezbollah, Iran, and China are determining Middle Eastern policy.
And America is the greatest debtor nation in the world. And if China were to stop either buying our treasury bills or begin selling our treasury bills and our agency debt, why, of course, it would topple the American economy today. This did not happen by accident. It's happening by intent, I believe. And it certainly foreshadows the destruction of the financial system of America, indeed the whole world. We're going to be back in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program with Barry Shamish.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
With food prices soaring to all-time highs, as the dollar continues to fall in value, what can you and your family do to guarantee that fresh, nutritious vegetables will make it to your dinner table? Garden in a Can. Garden in a Can is your source for premium, long-term storable seeds. Garden in a Can is ready when you are. Plant them now or store them for when you really need them. There are 16 large, hermetically sealed, non-hybrid, open-pollinated packets of seeds, along with detailed planting instructions sealed in a can for ultimate long-term protection. Garden in a Can. It's that simple. Fresh, healthy, easy. Only $69.95 for over a half acre of safe, fresh vegetables. Ready when you are. Stop procrastinating and start preparing with Garden in a Can. For more details, visit GardenInACan.com today. That's GardenInACan.com or call 866-598-7396, 866-598-7396.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
There for a purpose in God's plan. Do I like the Israeli government? No. Do I like the way that they're treating the Palestinians? No. But of course, I'm not going to choose up sides here. That's God's decision as to what's going on over there. But I will tell you, everything the Americans are doing is simply making matters worse. And if America really wanted to stop the missiles getting to Hamas, why, they would simply tell the Egyptians, you stop allowing them to build those tunnels, you stop allowing them to send the missiles through the tunnels, or we're going to cut off the $3 billion a year that we're giving you. But you see, America doesn't really want to stop this. The forces which control America's foreign policy really are not interested in Israel or America. They are part of what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness, and the occult forces behind them. Are there really occult organizations out there? Absolutely. You go to loserstrust.org and read about the beings who really control the world, these enlightened beings that live, of course, indefinitely. And what they're really talking about is demonic spirits. loserstrust.org. There are all sorts of websites out there for the OTO, Aleister Crowley's organization, for the Rosicrucians, for the Theosophists, which is a Luciferian organization, for the Freemasons, and so many of them are adorned by that same eye you see on the back of the dollar bill, the glorified eye in the triangle, over the top of the pyramid, the unfinished pyramid. You need, of course, to get the DVD, The Eye of the Phoenix. It's very important. It will help you communicate with others the significance of the occult and Luciferian emblems on the back of the dollar bill. Beneath the caption, In God We Trust, they just don't tell you what God they're talking about, because it's not the Lord Jesus Christ that we worship. You need to get the DVD, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning, Riddles in Stone, the Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. You need to get the DVD with Constance Cumby, The Emergence, telling about when the world leader will soon come. You need to get the DVD with Chris Pinto when he spoke with us. Chris put out all the DVDs, The Eye of the Phoenix, The Secret Mysteries, the Riddles in Stone, but Chris gave a talk called The Atlantis Connection. We've got a four-tape set, or four-CD set with Constance Cumby, the Aquarian Conspiracy. The Aquarian Conspiracy. There is a conspiracy. There is a conspiracy against God. If you get out your Strong's Concordance, you can read about it. And, of course, they want to attack anybody who talks or uses the word conspiracy. But there really is a conspiracy to destroy Christianity. That's why Franklin Delano Roosevelt had put the emblem on the back of the dollar bill, the occult emblem, also appointed of many of the Supreme Court justices, he and, of course, the man who succeeded him, a 33rd-degree Mason, Harry Truman, appointed the Masons, who then were to take God and prayer out of our schools. If you want to read more about it, my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, that's Brotherhood of Darkness. And, of course, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. Radioliberty.com, and, of course, go there and watch our DVDs and certainly read our newsletters and listen to our programs that are there. And we have another section on YouTube links or video links. The information is there that you'll need to know, but you'll want to read our November and December 2008 newsletters. Explain how the establishment created this whole housing crisis with the idea of bringing down our economy, and the reason, of course, that they did not try to, to buy up all the housing bonds, to collateralize debt obligations when Henry Paulson got the $700 billion was because they didn't want to stop the problem. And the very day, October the 3rd of last year, why, of course, the Federal Reserve began paying interest on the reserves and drove in $500 billion, dried up the lending of the country. They don't want to stop the problem. They want to increase it. So our number, 1-800-544-8927, please pray for Radio Liberty.